Berlin Noir Beyond the Palm Trees explores themes of violence, abuse, murder, and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised for potentially triggering content. Welcome to Island Noir Beyond the Palm Trees, the podcast that delves deep into the most compelling true crime cases. I'm your host, Sol, and today we embark on a journey into the tragic case of Elisa Esquero. Elisa was a six-year-old girl full of potential, love, and dreams, but her life was marred by unimaginable abuse and neglect. In this episode, we will examine the shocking details of Elisa's life, the warning signs that were overlooked, and the attempts by concerned individuals to intervene. Join me as we honor Elisa's memory by shedding light on her life, the systemic failures that failed to protect her, and lessons we can learn from her devastating story. Elisa Esquero was born in New York City on February 11, 1989, to father Gustavo Esquero and mother Alwilda Lopez. Gustavo, a Cuban immigrant seeking new opportunities, arrived in America in May of 1980. He took a job as a community aide in a homeless shelter situated in the Fort Greene section of Brooklyn, New York. His role in the shelter brought him into contact with various individuals facing challenging circumstances. And in 1987, he encountered someone who would become a pivotal figure in the tragic events that unfolded later, Alwilda Lopez. Alwilda Lopez was a Puerto Rican resident at the shelter, struggling with drug addiction. Prior to that, she had been evicted from an apartment she shared with her previous partner, Ruben Rivera, to whom she shared two children with. It was a result of their failure to pay rent, a situation exacerbated by Alwilda's heavy drug use, that she would not only lose custody of her children, but also become homeless. Although Gustavo's and Alwilda's relationship appeared promising, it would take a significant turn when Gustavo realized the severity of Alwilda's addiction and its potential consequences for their future child. He then made the difficult decision to end their relationship. 2 years after they first met, their daughter, Elisa, came into the world. However, her arrival was accompanied by a deeply concerning circumstance. Elisa was born at Woodhull Hospital with a heartbreaking struggle, addiction to cocaine. It's a sad situation. Elisa's very first moments in this world were marked by the painful consequences of her mother's drug addiction. This would undoubtedly shape the challenges that Elisa would face throughout her short life. The severity of Alwilda's addiction and its impact on Elisa's well-being led to a significant decision. After her birth, social workers immediately alerted the city's Child Welfare Administration services regarding her condition. Full custody of Elisa was granted to her father, Gustavo. Despite his lack of prior parenting experience, by all accounts, Gustavo was a devoted and loving father. He actively sought guidance, attended parenting classes, and sought advice from relatives and friends on how to care for his daughter. One of Gustavo's co-workers, Cynthia Nuljul, stated, "We assisted him with formula, taught him how to change diapers, and even showed him how to comb Elisa's hair. He quickly caught on, and his love for that little girl was evident." Elisa and her father, Gustavo, shared countless moments of joy and happiness together. They embarked on outings to the circus, visited the park, and enjoyed trips to the movies. Gustavo cherished his daughter so deeply that he carried stacks of pictures of her in his wallet, a testament to their bond. When Elisa turned 4, Gustavo went above and beyond to celebrate her baptism into the Catholic Church. He rented a grand banquet hall, creating a memorable and enchanting atmosphere for the event. This gesture highlighted the immense pride Gustavo felt in his daughter and his commitment to her milestones. Gustavo would often refer to Elisa as his princess, emphasizing the profound love and devotion he had for her. In 1990, Gustavo took the initiative to enroll Elisa in a Montessori preschool. However, his deteriorating health soon posed challenges in covering the cost of her education. Recognizing Elisa's exceptional academic potential and Gustavo's unwavering dedication as a father, the teachers and school principal decided to introduce her to one of the school's patrons, Prince Michael of Greece. It is said that when Prince Michael visited the school, Elisa enthusiastically leaped into his arms, remaining by his side throughout the day. Touched by their connection, Prince Michael made a heartfelt offer to sponsor Elisa's private tuition at the independent Brooklyn Friends School until the 12th grade. In response to his generous gesture, Elisa expressed her gratitude through a handwritten note, showcasing her appreciation for the opportunity. Following this act of kindness, Prince Michael of Greece occasionally sent Elisa small gifts, to which she reciprocated by expressing her thanks through drawings or notes. This exchange fostered a meaningful connection between Elisa and Prince Michael, serving as a source of support and encouragement in her educational journey. In 1991, Elisa's mother, Aguilda Lopez, sought court approval for unsupervised weekend visits with her daughter. The court granted her petition, allowing Elisa to spend weekends at Awilda's apartment in Manhattan's Lower East Side. At this time, Awilda was married to Carlos Lopez, a maintenance worker. She also regained custody of her two oldest children and went on to have three more children. Tragically, during these weekend visits, Elisa suffered abuse. The exact nature of the abuse is deeply disturbing and will be explored in further detail as we continue to investigate the case. Recognizing the gravity of the situation, Gustavo Esquero, Elisa's father, took action in 1992. He filed a petition with the courts seeking to have Awilda's parental rights terminated. As a result, the weekend visits were suspended, and Elisa returned to living with her father full-time. Gustavo's legal actions reveal how far he was willing to go to safeguard his daughter's well-being and emphasize his determination to provide her with a secure and stable environment. Gustavo Esquero made arrangements with his cousin, Elsa Canizares, to relocate to his native country of Cuba with Elisa. He had purchased airline tickets for himself and his daughter, with plans to travel on May 26, 1994. However, the anticipated journey took a tragic turn. In May, Gustavo was admitted to the hospital due to acute respiratory complications, which were later diagnosed as lung cancer. In a heartbreaking twist of fate, on the very day Gustavo had intended to embark on their journey to Cuba, he passed away. The aftermath of Gustavo's death left Elisa in a state of confusion and grief. In the midst of her sorrow, she turned to her mother for answers about her father's absence. Awilda's response was devastating. She simply screamed at the child, the words, "Your father's dead." After the tragic passing of Gustavo, a custody battle ensued for Elisa, which took place at Brooklyn Family Court under the jurisdiction of Judge Phoebe Greenbaum. Gustavo's cousin, Elsa Canizares, petitioned the court seeking custody of Elisa. Initially, temporary custody was granted to Aguilda Lopez. However, upon learning about this decision, Elsa Canizares challenged the ruling and applied for custody herself. She cited the documented abuse that Elisa had endured during the unsupervised weekend visits with her mother. She also raised concerns about the way Aguilda had spoken to the child. To support her case, Phyllis Bryce, the director of the Montessori School, and Prince Michael of Greece both wrote letters to the judge strongly recommending that Elsa be granted custody. Phyllis Bryce even reached out to a family court judge to express the concerns of herself and numerous school staff members regarding Elisa's safety under her mother's care. Elsa Canizares faced significant challenges during the court hearings, as she lacked the necessary financial resources to afford legal representation. Unlike Aguilda Lopez, who had the support of a lawyer from the Legal Aid Society and a federally funded parenting program. Elsa attended the hearings without any legal representation. At one hearing, Aweda's legal representatives testified about her efforts to overcome drug addiction, portraying her as someone who was making attempts to stay clean. They made false claims that caseworkers had visited the Lopez residence and that Elisa had expressed a strong desire to live with her mother. During the proceedings, Elsa Canizares also faced criticism from Aweda's legal team for her attempt to gain custody of Elisa. They accused her of having the audacity to try and take Elisa away from her mother. Elsa Canizares' unwavering concerns for Elisa's safety drove her to fight against the odds despite the lack of legal representation. Her response to the accusations aimed to highlight the genuine apprehension she felt about the potential consequences of placing Elisa in her mother's care. Despite these concerns and recommendations, Judge Greenbaum ultimately awarded custody of Elisa to her mother, Awilda. This decision placed Elisa, who had been the center of her father's world, into a crowded apartment with five other siblings. Tragically, on November 22, 1995, a year and a half after the loss of her beloved father, 6-year-old Elisa Esquero was brutally murdered by her own mother. This devastating outcome highlights the tragic consequences of the custody decision and the subsequent events that unfolded. Once Awilda was granted full custody of Elisa, she made the decision to withdraw from the private school Elisa had been attending. Instead, Elisa was enrolled in Manhattan's public school 126. However, it didn't take long for the school's staff to notice troubling signs in Elisa's behavior. At public school 126, Elisa was observed to be withdrawn, emotionally disturbed, and uncommunicative. She also exhibited frequent urination, which raised concerns about her well-being. The principal of the school even noticed that Elisa had numerous bruises and walked with apparent difficulty. She also started pulling out sections of her own hair. The situation took a distressing turn when an anonymous letter was sent to the Manhattan Child Welfare Authorities on March 14, 1995. The letter revealed shocking details about Awilda's treatment of Elisa, including cutting off her hair and locking her in a dark room for prolonged periods of time. Just 6 days after the letter was received, Elisa was admitted to the hospital with a fractured shoulder. Heartbreakingly, the wound had been left untreated for 3 days. Despite multiple reports of abuse from various sources, including officials at Public School 126, the Manhattan Child Welfare Authorities dismissed the concerns as not reportable. They claimed there was a lack of direct evidence of child abuse or neglect, leading to rejection of the original report. This left Elisa in a vulnerable position, as her cries for help went unheard. It is important to note that Awilda, by this time, had relapsed into regular crack cocaine use. In December of 1994, she withdrew Elisa from public school 126 and made no effort to enroll her in any other school. This neglectful decision further exposed Elisa to a harmful environment and denied her access to the educational support she desperately needed. The extent of Elisa's suffering becomes even more distressing when we consider the specific details of the abuse she endured. During Awilda Lopez's unsupervised visits in 1991, it was discovered that Elisa had injuries, including at her genital area, which indicated physical harm inflicted upon her. In addition to this, Elisa bravely disclosed that her mother had repeatedly hit her and locked her in a closet. The impact of the abuse was not only physical, but also psychological. Elisa's father noticed that she had started bedwetting and losing control of her bowels, which are common signs of severe emotional distress. Elisa would also have nightmares upon learning she was to be in the custody of her mother, even for short periods of time. A family acquaintance observed that Elisa would vomit upon returning from her visits from her mother, and would refuse to enter bathrooms. It has been reported that Aweda's two oldest children disclosed to relatives and neighbors that during these visits, Alisa would suffer from physical abuse and neglect inflicted by her own mother and stepfather. These behaviors further highlight the depth of fear and anxiety Alisa experienced in her mother's presence. The horrifying details of the abuse inflicted upon Alisa by her mother and stepfather are deeply distressing. Witnesses, including Alisa's siblings, have reported a range of unimaginable abuse and indignities she endured. These acts of cruelty included repeated acts of physical violence, such as punching and kicking, as well as degrading actions like forcing Alisa to consume her own feces or drink ammoniated water. Awalda would even use Alisa's head and face to mop the floor, causing further harm and humiliation. The extent of the abuse is truly horrifying. Alisa suffered burns on her head, face, lips, and body, and was subjected to sexual violations using objects like a hairbrush or toothbrush. The torture continued, with Awenda hanging her from a shower rod for entertainment, even dropping heavy furniture on her fingers and toes. It is incredibly heartbreaking to hear that Alisa's desperate pleas for her mother to stop were heard by neighbors through the walls. She endured a life of confinement, locked in her bedroom with no social interactions, and denied access to the basic necessities like the toilet. Awenda demeaned Alisa with derogatory terms, such as mongoloid and a filthy little whore, while attributing Alisa's condition to a supposed spell cast by her late father, Gustavo. Awenda's partner, Carlos Lopez, also played a role in perpetrating the cycle of abuse, physically mistreating and neglecting Alisa and her siblings. Shockingly, neighbors' reports made to authorities regarding the abuse were ignored, leaving Alisa vulnerable to the abuse and neglect inflicted by her mother and stepfather. On November 22, 1995, Awenda reached out to her sister, Mercy Torres, and shared the distressing condition of Alisa, describing her as being bedridden with fluid, later identified as brain fluid, leaking from her nose and mouth. When Mrs. Torres urged Awenda to take Alisa to the hospital, Awenda postponed it, claiming she would consider it after finishing her household chores. The following morning, Awenda invited a neighbor to witness Alisa's lifeless body. Despite the neighbor's inability to detect any signs of life, Awenda hesitated to contact the authorities and instead threatened to commit suicide. Concerned, the neighbor promptly alerted the police. The arrival of the police at the residence following the 911 call revealed a shocking sight. As they lifted Alisa from her bed, they noticed red marks resembling welts or cigarette burns scattered across her body. Awenda Lopez was arrested that same day, while denying any wrongdoing. Although Awenda displayed little emotion upon her arrest, she later confessed to striking Alisa and forcefully slamming her head into a concrete wall on November 20th. Awenda attempted to justify her actions by claiming that Alisa was possessed by Satan and had died due to her own evilness. She also made bizarre claims about inserting snakes into the child's throat to exorcise demons and using Alisa's hair as a mop by holding her upside down. Forensic examination conducted during the autopsy unveiled a multitude of injuries. Alisa had broken fingers with one bone visibly protruding through the skin, a broken toe, internal organ damage, and deep welts and burns on her head, face, and body. Furthermore, evidence of trauma, including tearing, was found in her genitalia and rectum. Forensic analysis confirmed that these injuries had been sustained over an extended period of time. Alisa Esquero's funeral, held on November 29, 1995, drew an estimated 300 attendees, comprising a diverse group of mourners. Among those present at the wake and funeral were relatives, neighbors, politicians, school officials, Prince Michael of Greece, and members of the public who were deeply moved by the tragic case. Elisa's body was adorned with a white crown of flowers, resting in a coffin embellished with white flowers surrounding it. A significant symbol of her cherished memories, a Barbie doll, gifted to her by her late father, was carefully placed beside her. In a tribute, a single red rose was delicately positioned in her hand. Elisa's final resting place at Cypress Hill Cemetery is marked by a gravestone bearing a plaque inscribed with the words, "World, please watch over the children." In a court hearing presided over by Judge Schlesinger at New York State Supreme Court on June 25, 1996, Awanda Lopez, then 29 years old, entered a guilty plea to the charge of second-degree murder in relation to the death of her daughter. As part of the plea agreement, she accepted a sentence of 15 years to life in exchange for her admission of guilt in the murder of Elisa. During the court proceedings, the distressing details of Awanda's brutal treatment of Elisa were recounted before the judge. It was revealed how Awanda had subjected Elisa to severe beatings and torture, ultimately abandoning her to suffer alone for a period of 2 days. Despite becoming eligible to parole in 2010, Awanda Lopez has remained in prison since August 1996. Her parole request was denied in the most recent parole hearing held in September 2022. As of that date, Awanda Lopez continues to be held at the maximum security Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women. The shocking details surrounding Elisa's custody arrangements sparked public outrage after her death. Despite Awanda Lopez's obvious and escalating drug addiction, as well as the distressing signs of abuse inflicted on Elisa by her mother and stepfather, a judge actually awarded custody to Awanda back in 1994, disregarding the concerns raised by Elisa's family and school. What makes matters even more troubling is that multiple reports expressing worry for Elisa's safety were submitted to the child welfare agencies, like the Manhattan Child Welfare Authorities, after the initial custody decision. Yet these concerns fell on deaf ears, and Elisa remained in her mother's custody. The aftermath of Elisa's death casts a spotlight on Judge Greenbaum, who received intense criticism for her 1994 ruling in favor of Awanda Lopez over Elsa Canizares. In her defense, Judge Greenbaum claimed to have followed procedural recommendations when making the custody determination. But that response did little to quell the public's dissatisfaction. Then Mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani, expressed his opinion on the matter. He emphasized that judges are expected to consider all facts and records, going beyond procedural recommendations to make informed determinations. In the wake of Elisa's untimely death, the mayor of New York City at the time, Rudolph Giuliani, took swift action. Recognizing the need for significant changes within the city's child welfare system, Mayor Giuliani initiated an urgent review. That review led to the remarkable development of the Administration for Children's Services. This agency was established as a direct response to the tragedy that befell Elisa Esquero. The Administration for Children's Services is dedicated to addressing child welfare in New York, was born out of the urgent need for reform. It's worth noting that on Monday, February 12, 1996, Governor George Pataki played a vital role in this process. He officially signed Elisa's law into legislation during a ceremony held in Manhattan. The event was attended by social workers, educators, and concerned relatives who had reported the chronic abuse Elisa endured at the hands of her mother and stepfather. Elisa's law brought about significant changes in how child abuse cases were handled in the state. Under this law, state agencies were granted permission to access sealed, unfounded reports of child abuse. Additionally, social services commissioners were given the authority to disclose information about abuse or maltreatment to the public when there was a legitimate interest in the case. One crucial aspect of ELISA's law was its provision that prevented child protection agencies from expunging unfounded reports of child abuse until the youngest child name in the report reached 28 years of age. This measure aimed to ensure accountability and transparency in the handling of such cases. ELISA's law continues to serve as a reminder of the need to hold the child welfare agencies of New York City and the Administration for Children's Services, ACS, accountable for their performance. It's a step towards preventing future tragedies like ELISA's and promoting a safer environment for vulnerable children. The case of ELISA Esquedo is a tragic and deeply disturbing example of the failures within the child welfare system. While ELISA's case remains a heartbreaking reminder of the failures that occurred, it also serves as a catalyst for continuous improvement and vigilance in protecting vulnerable children. The legacy of ELISA Esquedo lives on through the ongoing efforts to improve the child welfare system and to provide support to at-risk children as well as prevent future tragedies. As we conclude, let us remember ELISA and the countless other children who have suffered similar fate. It is our collective responsibility as a society to learn from cases like ELISA's and to advocate for stronger safeguards. Also work towards creating an environment where every child can thrive and be protected from harm. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Sol, and this is Island Noir Beyond the Palm Trees. Until next time, keep seeking the truth beyond the shadows.